vessel while you work.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Mike Maino. Welcome to Company Break, a program dedicated to the companies and organizations in our local area, giving them a chance to talk about what services they can provide for you, our WCRI listeners. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Company Break, and it's a real treat to introduce you to an author for today's segment. Mike Freeman is here. Welcome, Mike. Nice to have you with us.
Hey, thanks very much for having me.
It's nice to have an author for a change rather than someone playing a tuba or a saxophone or things like that that I frequently get to do. And Company Break allows us to talk to people that might not be as involved musically, but they have a lot of good things to offer. And you have a book out called Neither Mountain Nor River, and it says Fathers, Sons, and Unsettled Faith. So we want to talk about this book. It's available pretty much everywhere now on various book sources, correct?
Right, yeah, that's right.
And you're here because you're a local guy. You live in a general area, correct?
Jamestown, yeah.
Jamestown, that's pretty local. We have a lot of listeners on Jamestown. And you got a pass, passport to get off the island and come here to
that's
the
right, station. Yeah, yeah, I got to cross the bridge.
Some people don't leave the island very much. But,
that's right.
So how long have you been in Jamestown?
We've been there 9 years.
9 years. And tell us a little bit about the premise of this book, and how long ago did you write it?
It's been out for a couple of years now, and I became a stay-at-home parent very suddenly. I was living in Alaska for 10 years, and then I was dating a woman back east and back in New York. I grew up in Connecticut, and so
okay.
I used to come back for visits all the time. And I met her at a Christmas party through a mutual friend, and we were both 40 and decided to advance the dating process.
Well,
and,
there you go.
Yeah.
At 40, all right.
Yeah, and so anyway, I came back to Mary, and she was pregnant right at the start of the recession in 2008. And
okay.
My background was in fisheries management. I worked for the Fish and Game Department, and there wasn't a lot of available work for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had written when our first daughter was about a year old, I wrote another book. And so this was the second book. And when I was holding my daughter when she was just a few days old in a park, I realized I really didn't know anything about kids or how to take care of them. And
that's kind of scary, right?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people go through that.
Oh, absolutely,
but
yeah,
I think even people that grow up babysitting and stuff, when it's actually their kid, they really, really understand that they don't know much about them. And
right.
That was particularly so for me. And you know, I started to have a little bit of anxiety about that, and I saw a bird in a park in Queens. That's where we were living at the time. And it was a black and white warbler. It was during the fall migration when the birds are moving back and forth
mm-hmm.
from up here to down there. And my father raised me in a deep background in the outdoors, and he was a big birder. And it reminded, everything snapped into place that, wow, I have a great template on how to parent, because my parents did what I thought was a decent job.
You turned out okay.
Well, you know, I don't know about that, but they gave me a good model of how to
right.
parent, and that's what the book's really about, is the way of reflecting on how my father raised me in the woods.
Okay, the term on the cover, it says Fathers, Sons, and Unsettled Faith. Unsettled Faith, tell us about that.
So, yeah, that's the second part of the book. I've always had a very deep belief in God, but I've never really understood what that meant. I was raised outside of church. I've never been to a church service. So somewhere very early in life, probably before I can remember, I just walked outside and literally said, my God.
Good place to find him.
A good place to find him, yeah. And I've spent a great portion of my life out in the woods, just sort of trying to figure out what everybody tries to figure out. Why are we here and who put us here and why? But I've never been very comfortable with the answers that I get. And so that's where the unsettled faith comes from.
That's the unsettled part.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get into the nitty gritty of about first off, even not talking about the story of the book, but just the process. You said this is your second book.
It is, yeah.
And so is this something you've always had an ambition to do, be a writer, or is it just kind of came to you?
Yeah, I would say around 20 years old, maybe. Well, it was probably after college, so mm-hmm. say 22, 23. I had a job installing invisible fences in Connecticut and then Vermont, and it was a very busy job, but I was living alone, and at night, I go, well, what am I going to do with myself? So I just started writing one day, and I enjoyed it, but I never thought it would progress beyond that. I got a couple of small publications in literary journals while I was living in Alaska, and then parenthood came. And mm-hmm. so when I first moved back, I was sending out resume after resume into the cyber ether and getting nothing in return.
Right. Particularly back then. Yeah.
Particularly in 08, 09. And I go, God, what can I do while I'm trying to raise this child? And I love canoeing. And I go, well, I've published a few things. Maybe I can send out a book proposal. So anyway, the SUNY Press, the State University of New York Press, took a proposal where I canoed down the Hudson River and talked about the river's history and how it relates to, you know, we're living in very delicate political times, and that really, it's been going on for a while, but in 08, 09, when mm-hmm. you know, we had a new president, a lot of things got unleashed that time.
Sure, yeah.
that have probably been there for a while, but the book talks about the history of the Hudson versus the times we're living in now and how the two match up. But so that gave me sort of something to do outside of parenting.
Right. Canoeing down the Hudson River.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Yeah, the trip went great.
Was this something you did in little segments? In other words, I canoed for an hour or two?
No. We got child coverage. Our daughter was 5 months old at the time, and I went from almost the top. I didn't quite go to the source, which would have taken another 3 or 4 days, but and then got out in Manhattan. It took 12 days.
So this was nonstop, 12 days?
Nonstop, yeah. Okay. Yeah, and I was paddling as hard as I could because I really wanted to.
So I'm just trying to picture. I know some spots along the Hudson River that I don't know that I don't want to pull over and spend the night at.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that. Yeah, I had to pick my spots.
So this is you actually camped. You didn't like pull over and go to a Holiday Inn or something?
Well, I did that twice.
Okay.
I did two, or is it two? It was 3 nights in hotels,
okay.
And then the rest were in, camping, and not always knowing if I was supposed to be there or not.
Waiting for someone to say, you can't stop
there. That's right.
Okay, let's get to the nitty-gritty of the book and talk about, you mentioned the very first word is fathers, then sons, and unsettled faith on the cover of the book, and when you think about, everybody goes through this, I'm sure, I shouldn't say everybody, a lot of people go through thinking of their parents, whether it's their mother or their father or someone that brought them up, and then when they're gone, missing them. First off, is your father still alive?
He is, yeah. Okay. He's still with us.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah.
And what role did your father have in all of this for you to come up with this idea to write this?
Oh, well, that's actually a big part of the book is my dad gave me, the only advice he gave me when my daughter was born was he said, just pick one thing, or he goes, find something that you both love to do and stay with it, because, you know, when kids become teenagers, things get a little unsettled in themselves, and
right.
If you can find one connection, you got a chance, basically, is what he said.
Yeah.
And for us, it was the woods and hunting. We did a lot of hunting and fishing and even trapping together, and it really bound us together. When say I was about 15, 16 years old, you know, things were a little tense between us, as they it's just sort of a natural process of growing up that you need to distance yourself from your parents, and it's a painful process. But that really kept us together, and so that was a big premise for the book. So just by the way he raised me, that was his role in the book.
Okay. And what about your mother's involvement in all of that?
So she died when I was 26. She died quite a bit before all this. So I'm 50 now. And so I had a great relationship with her, but it was much more conversational. Whereas with my father, it was, you know, men are famous for not talking a lot and not being able to express themselves. But this comes right at the end of the book. The book's not about autism, but I have a daughter. Our oldest daughter turned out to be autistic and doesn't speak. And so what I learned through her is something I actually already knew through my father, that you don't necessarily always have to speak. You can really understand somebody through just being in their presence. And that very often that's enough. And more often than not, that's actually enough. And as I look back through my life, and I think this is true of most people, we have all these great memories, but we very rarely remember what somebody said or what was said. We just sort of remember the imprint of whether it was a good memory or not. So if you go to a great wedding, you might remember a joke that somebody told, but you won't remember it the right way. But you don't remember the vows. You don't really remember anything. You just remember, wow, that was a great time.
Yeah, it was a great time, and the guy told great jokes.
I don't know what they were, but I laughed.
There was the one about, I can't remember.
Exactly.
All right, so from growing up with your dad at that age and then off to college, and where did you go to college?
It was a little school in Pennsylvania called Franklin and Marshall.
I've heard of that.
Yeah.
And then from there, was that then off to Alaska?
No, I did Invisible Fence in Connecticut for a few years, and then my mom died in that whole area, in that whole era, and it, that really gets involved. She died of cancer, so it took a little while. And then I described this in the book. It was a strange feeling of, I think this happened to my dad too. You just feel released. I never felt like I could leave the East. I didn't really want to. I didn't like being around my mom and stuff like that. But when she died and all the pain and everything associated with that, it just felt like, oh, now I can go. And it was very confused emotions about that, because you just felt a little guilty. But yeah, I went to California with that company, Invisible Fence. I was there for 3 years and loved it. But I ended up in Alaska working for the Fish and Game Department. I thought I was going up there for a summer, and it's like so many people, after 10 years, I thought I'd be there for life. I loved it. It
was 10 years in Alaska.
Yeah, it was not the part of Alaska that we all think about. It was Southeast Alaska, which is around Juneau. So the climate's more like Seattle. It's not frozen tundra and stuff, but it's a lot of salmon and a lot of bears. And my job was to go out in the woods, sometimes with people, but very often alone. So I actually couldn't believe I was getting paid to do what I did. So it was a lot of fun.
With the salmon and the bear.
Yeah. So it was a lot of fun.
All right. We're going to take a short break, and we're talking with Mike Freeman. He is the author of two books, one called Drifting, 2 Weeks on the Hudson. And the main topic today is the new book, Neither Mountain Nor River, Fathers and Sons, an Unsettled Faith. We'll be back with more about Mike after this. Welcome back to Company Break. I'm Mike Mano, and we're sitting with Mike Freeman, who is the author of a couple of books, one called Drifting, 2 Weeks on the Hudson, and then this one, Neither Mountain Nor River. And I just want to read a couple things, Mike, that I see on the press side of things, that you have a couple of pretty nice quotes here. The poetic lushness of this book is all, writes the Providence Journal. The Buffalo News adding, if you only read one book this year, make it Neither Mountain Nor River. Set in Northeast and Alaska, the book ends locally in the Exeter Woods and along the Charlestown Beach, right in our neighborhood here. So we'll find out more about that, but some nice things being said by book critics, which aren't always nice. I mean, book critics can be a little painful sometimes. Were you as fortunate with your first book?
Yeah, the It never got reviewed anywhere huge, but no big papers, but it was reviewed pretty well.
Nobody said, "What are you thinking?"
What were you thinking? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that would be the way it is if I wrote a book, but at any rate, maybe someday someone will write down what I say, because that's about right. The only way it'll get anywhere. Let's get back to, we talked briefly about your dad and your relationship with him, and I want to talk a little bit more about that, and when you realized you was getting older, that hits all of us. Talk a little bit about that part of the book.
Yeah, so that's a chapter in Alaska. My dad, when I was up there, he used to come up for a week every year in October. We'd kind of structured it around baseball season when the playoffs were going on and that sort of thing. But we'd hunt ducks all day and then watch baseball at night. And then so we kind of maintained our connection even while I was away. But yeah, so when I was young, and I described this in the book, when you're young, your parents are everything. Mm-hmm. They can tie your shoe, so they must know everything in the universe there is to know. And you grow up with this, almost deify them, which causes problems when you realize that they're just people trying to get through their lives and do the best they can. But he was always a very strong guy, just vital guy. And he loved being out in the woods, and he moves quietly through the woods, but very fluidly. And I always have that image, and still do, of him in that state. And so I wouldn't see him for a while when I was in Alaska, and then he would come up and I go, wow, he's getting old. He's always had bad eyes, but he wouldn't be able to see ducks that were quite close. And and we paddled in a canoe a lot up there, and it would take him minutes to get out of the canoe, whereas before he would just snap right out of it and throw it over his shoulders and off he'd go. And we were hunting this one stream by foot, and he just couldn't get over this log. He was 69 years old at this point, and I was 39, and that was a big difference between losing my mom when I was 26. You're in your prime when you're 26, and sure. the idea that you might die, you obviously know what death is,
it doesn't hit home yet.
There's too many firewalls between you and death. Yeah, right. You just think you're going to live forever. And so even though I kind of watched my mom waste away, the fact that I was going to die still wasn't really a thought in my head. But at 39, you're quite a bit different. You're starting to, you're slower. You're not moving around as fast as you used to. So it was starting to hit home that, I think I'm actually going to get old like all the other people. And then watching my dad at 69, it really was like looking into into the future. Like, God, it really does happen to all of us. If it happened to him, it's obviously going to happen to me.
And I know the situation. I'm a lot closer to him.
Yeah, exactly.
And I can remember a few years ago, I was performing at this concert, and we went around back to the stage door, and walking through this parking lot I'd always walked through, suddenly there was a fence, about a 5-foot fence there.
Yeah.
And that hadn't been there before. Right. And the other guys in my group all turned around and walked back. Yeah. And I said, "I'm going over the fence." And I'll tell you, I suddenly realized, "Ooh, I'm not 39 anymore.
I can't do it anymore." Yeah, it really is like that.
Yeah.
And so I held my dad over this log going, "My God, our roles have switched." Because, I remember some of my first memories are just him carrying me through the woods, when I was little, and pointing out birds and how strong he was. And then now I was helping him, and which was nice. It felt like you were paying back what you needed to pay back. But on the other hand, it does tear you up a little bit inside. And so that really does trigger a lot of things of questions about immortality and how fragile we are. And we have this great life. It's so enjoyable, but you have to leave it at some point, and then you have no idea what's going to happen when you die, and nobody does. So a lot of the book is about things that we see and experience in our lives, and then we try to project that onto all the things we don't know.
Coming up Father's Day, just in a few days from now, next week, And this would be a great read for someone that is remembering that. Good time of year to reflect and pick this book up and you know, remember and think and reflect back.
Yeah.
I want to change gears pretty dramatically, I think, because I'm looking at some bullet notes, and we're going from talking to your father getting older to the line here is the book isn't about race, but there is a chapter that discusses it. Now, that's, you know, I would think quite a bit away from your dad getting older.
It is, yeah. So my dad's history, he was born in 1937, so just for prior to World War II. And his dad was, I think, 35. And he joined, when Pearl Harbor happened, he joined the military, but he got stationed in Florida. And he was, the Air Force was part of the Army, and then he got stationed with the 8th Army, what was called the 8th Army Air Force. In Panama City, Florida, which is on the Panhandle, or thereabouts, and back then it was quasi-frontier. You know, now it's all Piggly Wigglies and miniature golf courses and stuff like that. But back then it was quite wild. And so he spent 4 years there with his dad, and his dad was kind of a distant guy, and he was a drinker. So my dad didn't have a terribly close relationship with him. But the Army was segregated then, and there was a, you know, back then what they called a colored unit there. And this guy named John Pittman, who was in the Army, he was a mechanic, but one of the things he did was basically take care of my father. And he was a woodsman. And, you know, growing up, I always associated African Americans with the city, but I, you know, I kind of forget that there was this whole other history where they lived. Particularly in the South, they're very agricultural and woodsy. And so a great deal of what my my father's kinship with nature came from this guy. And he would just spend, I loved, like when I was about 8-9 years old, I just loved hearing John Pittman stories, and there was tons of them.
Right.
And he knew he just knew the woods very well, and he imparted that to my dad. So he's, you know, I always kind of felt obligated to him, but I don't know anything about him other than, you know, I don't know where he's buried, but the book kind of goes into, God, what would I have been like if I was white? And so this guy, if he was, say, 25 in 1943, he grew up right along, he grew up in lynching, he grew up in the lynching South, and I was like, God, if I was, you know, born in Georgia in 1908, I might have been a very different person than I am now. So that's what that chapter goes. But it's basically trying to pay back some of the debt that we owe this guy, both my father and I.
Well, you know, we have a lot of people listening. Maybe somebody knows John Pittman's
story. Could be.
And they'll write in and say, I know that story.
Yeah, I know where that guy is.
You know, you talked briefly about the fact that you're not a church goer as such. But you're a believer in God and the great outdoors, obviously. How does the book deal with that as far as a structured spiritual life versus just living the way you live?
Yeah, so that's quite a bit what the book's about. And I've been always been, like the title says, unsettled in that faith. But I have a, it's never occurred to me that there isn't a God. I'm a big believer in science as well, so I believe in the Big Bang and all that stuff. But what caused life is just very difficult to get from, you know, rocks and cosmic dust to all the different creatures we have here. So I'm sort of in that gray area between, I don't believe in an old guy in the sky, but that there's something out there that I just have always wanted to figure out what it is, and I can't, and none of us can.
There you go. No regrets about not being brought up in a, you know, going to Sunday school on Sundays?
I do envy that sometimes. There's that sense of community that people get from a church, and a certain certainty. So if you are raised in a church, you're always told that this is what it is. It's whatever your faith is,
whatever, for sure,
that's how it all came to be. And so that's sort of certainty. I always say I envy it, but I don't admire it, because it the way I live my life. I don't have any regrets about the way I've lived my life, even though it's sort of harried and unsettled. But the book does end. So I've got this autistic daughter, which sort of throws a big wrench into, well, if it's a kind God, how on earth could such a thing do that to a child? But it ends on, she's about 3 years old, and I was on Charlestown Beach in May. And as everybody in Rhode Island knows, it's May and September are the best beach months.
When no one else is there.
When right? No one else is there, and the ocean's still great. But the shorebirds were migrating through, and I was holding my daughter. I was kind of crouched down below her, and she was watching sandpipers, about 30 or 40 sandpipers, which were headed to the Arctic. And, you know, like flocks of birds move. I don't think ornithologists haven't figured out whether there's a lead bird that dictates
how they communicate.
Yeah, or they're just all reacting off one another. So it's right. Either it's either piloted or headless. That's how I phrased it in the book. Just like we are, either where life did just happen and there's no purpose to it at all, and the sun's gonna cool off, and then that'll be the end of Earth, and this doesn't mean anything. Or there is some sort of creator, and it does mean something. So we're either piloted or headless, just like the sandpiper flock. And I was looking at my daughter, and every day is new to her. She doesn't have any sense of history. She doesn't have any sense of anything, because she can't talk. And being around somebody like that is very refreshing. And I said to her, I said, look, Shannon, just look. And because she was just enjoying the birds moving, I don't think she was really thinking about much else. And so I learned from her to just try to relax and be mm-hmm. a little more settled in my faith than unsettled. And that
she is able to understand and respond that she understands.
No, so she doesn't have, as far as we know.
So
she
you
doesn't,
say, look, you're not sure if she knows that you said.
Right. Yeah. So for me, I was almost saying it to myself. Just relax and look, mm-hmm. to try to calm down and not think about things so much, mm-hmm. and just enjoy the day. And That's the conclusion of the book, right. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned Charlestown being on the beach watching the birds. What about the Exeter part? How does the woods of Exeter get in?
Yeah, that's so the Audubon has a great system of refuges around the state, and one of them is in Exeter, right off, roughly we're off 102. It's the Fisherville Audubon Refuge, and it's one of the few places, in fact, I think it might be the only place I've been in Rhode Island where you can't hear anything. It just dips into this little swale, and it's a big white pine forest. The trees are probably about 100 years old now, and you can't hear anything. You can't hear cars. You can't hear anything. It's surrounded. There's 102, and there's a couple other roads, but it's just sort of an acoustic shadow. And
just silence.
It's just silence, and I took her there one day, and that's the part of the book where I'm trying to give to my kids what my dad gave to me, you know, raising them in the woods and nature, and it's really helped her. It calms her down. She loves water, and you know, you see her looking around at the trees and stuff like that, and if you believe in the Garden of Eden, it really does, she does look like that's where she is, you know, everything's a wonder to her all day.
Perfect there, right?
Yeah, so that's where that takes place, and then it ends on the beach.
All right, well, it sounds like an extremely interesting read. It's not one of those books. It's not like The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. It isn't going to take forever to read it. It's available in paperback by going to any of the booksellers. And do you have a website they can go to? Or
oh, I do, yeah. It's just mostly about our autistic daughter and her sister. But it's Mike W. Freeman, F-R-E-E-M-A-N, .com.
Okay, Mike W. Freeman.com. And is there a link on there to how to get the book?
Sure. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So if people are interested in reaching you or sending you an email, they can do it through your website.
Right. Yeah.
And when you say available at typical book sources, like what?
Oh, the big online people, Barnes and Noble, Amazon.
Oh, okay.
And then but locally, the people at Bank Square Books in Mystic are great, and they now own a shop in Westerly called Savoy Books, and Island Books in Middletown's a great one as
Excellent.
Well.
Excellent. There you go, Island Books. And got to get this out. It should be, you get this on a Block Island, too. So that Block Island bookstore, that would be.
There's a bookstore out there. Yeah, that's right.
All right. Well, Mike, I appreciate you coming in today, sharing your story with our audience. Extremely interesting. We could go on for, I'm sure, for many hours. Is there anything else you'd like to add just before we sign off here, or you're good?
No, I really appreciate you having me in. Yeah, that's all terrific. Right.
Well, we'll look forward to checking the book out. I hope you all have the opportunity to purchase it and catch up on the Neither Mountain Nor River, Fathers and Sons, and Unsettled Faith. Author Mike Freeman, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
And to the rest of you, we'll see you next time on Company Break.